Alrighty, everyone. Welcome on to Hidden Gems, our first episode ever. And just a little bit about Hidden Gems. This is where we will uncover the treasures of the gaming world and bring some clarity to the most unique stories in the industry. So to start out, we want to put an emphasis on indie games and their development. So to dive into that a little bit more, I want to know, Undead, why do you think indie games are so important to the game industry as a whole?
Creativity.
Creativity?
Like, yes. Like, if you look at how the AAA scene acts and how the indie scene acts, AAA studios tend to rely on one franchise and will milk it to the way.
Oh, yeah.
But if you look at any indie studio, you'll find that they have a wide range of games in their own name, and they're usually not the same anywhere from each other.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, like, I'm getting sick of the AAA franchises we see over and over again, most notably Call of Duty, because I'm pretty sure we've all been sick of just hearing the next title of Call of Duty. And yeah. I've been dabbling more in indie games, like, more so in, like, the past 2 years than I ever have before.
So do you think, like, what is causing the lack of creativity? Is it just, like, these big studios just trying to pump out games and all the different time restraints and restrictions and different things that they have to meet, like quotas and whatnot, that's really kind of downplaying the creativity? Or what is it in particular, if you had to identify something?
Well, I will say it would be time restraint. Because you got to remember, too, that like AAA games have usually only been given the same amount of time to make a game since so long. And that's usually, what, 3 years? Maybe they'll get lucky and have Anthem for 7 years, and that led to nothing.
Yeah.
But, like, and that's the thing, too. Like, indie devs, if they got the money, they'll try to develop for as long as they want, if they choose to. The AAA scene, they have hundreds of millions of dollars and billions, but still choose to rush their games, cut deadlines, like Cyberpunk 2077. We all know that game could have waited. Even the developers wanted to wait on that game, but weren't allowed to.
Yeah.
Do we think Microsoft is taking a step forward in trying to break that chain? Like, when they're saying that they're not going to have Call of Duty cycle every year, and they're delaying a lot of their games now, try to put out more quality games, even though we have Halo, and Halo is Halo. We've talked about this. We've talked about this plenty on the When Worlds Collide podcast as well. Do you think Microsoft's taking a step in the right direction, or do you think no? Where do you stand on that?
I think they are, because I think they're also trying to break the cycle of forcing themselves to release games every year, which then ruins the quality of those games. Because, like, you guys have both said before that this year was a slow year for Microsoft.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. There's no doubt about it.
Party exclusives this
and
year for us,
it's
right?
Kind of hard too, because like it gives them more time to work on their games, but they also have to keep feeding their base their games every year because it's what's demanded at this point. Because both Sony and Nintendo both act the same way; they have to have something every year, and the players want it.
Right, and I mean we're guilty of putting some of that pressure on, you know, with Halo and whatnot. But I think for the most part, we're pretty content with the delays of games like Redfall and Starfield. As unfortunate as they are, it's going to be good for us in the long run. But this dry stint we're going through right now is pretty brutal. We were just mentioning, you know, like how barren this year has been. One of the top games for Microsoft this year has actually been Tunic, an independent developed game.
Yeah. It's nothing new for us either as Xbox fans to like go through dry spouts like we have. I feel like every year, like, we just get nothing, but we're still content with it because of what Microsoft has done and acquired all these indie studios. So, like, their lack of first-party exclusives comes in the form of, you know, having all these indie studios under their umbrella, and that we just get to play all these, like, new games month to month when they release on Game Pass.
Well, I think we all thought the drought was over with how meaty last year was.
Yeah.
We got so many good titles, first party games on Xbox that, like, thank God the drought is over. But we were a little A little early on that one.
A little bit.
A little pre-cum.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So with that being said, we all acknowledge that indie games play a huge role in the gaming industry. So we wanted to identify some of the ones that meant the most to us, right? Or, you know, some of our favorites. And we're going to exclude some of the real easy ones like Minecraft, Rocket League, Among Us, Fall Guys, all the ones that went from indie to absolutely blowing up. But we're each going to identify some of our favorites. We have a volunteer to go first.
Yeah, sure. I'll go first for this one. So I made the top three that I came up with. They weren't necessarily my favorite. They were really good, but it was like my most memorable indie games that I played throughout the years. And the one that I just had probably the most fun with was Risk of Rain 2, which
you keep hyping that up. I need to try it.
It's so good, dude. Yeah, it's so fun, especially when you play with your friends. But
sorry, I'm cutting you off again. How many players can you play at a time?
I believe four.
Okay, so we got three right here.
Yeah.
Who's gonna be our fourth chat?
Literally anyone. I would think. I'm pretty sure it's four player.
If we have to, I mean, do we have to play with Kat?
I mean, we're desperate. Desperate.
The game's worth it. I think I got it $5 on Xbox, but it was like when they first announced it, it was during Microsoft's E3 press conference back in when was it, like 2021, 2020, something like that. So like 2 years ago. And they released the game that day that they announced it at E3, and what made the game super popular when they announced it was they had a buy one, get one free for their game. So like when I was friends with like Trevor and our other friend Uga, who's in Virginia and everything, like we bought like two copies, and then we just gave it to our two other friends and everything. We just played the hell out of it. And I think I dumped like almost 200 hours into it on Steam, and that was like base game, which didn't have much of anything when it first released, but it was just that fun to play. And the studio itself was I like them a lot. The studio's actually called Hopoo Games.
Hopoo?
Yeah, Hopoo Games. And it's funny too because they have an item in the game called a Hopoo Feather, which I find funny. But that company, Risk of Rain 2 is obviously a sequel to the original one, Risk of Rain. I played a little bit of it. I wasn't really a fan of it, but mostly because it was like 2D style, and it looked like a pretty barren game for their first iteration. But what I found interesting about the company is when they're making the sequel, Risk of Rain 2, they originally were going to also make that game 2D style, but they had fan art sent into them, like showing the game in like a 3D setting, and that actually like inspired them to develop the game in a 3D manner.
Dude, that's actually a really dope story.
Yeah, so I thought it was really cool, and like they said it themselves, like when they saw that fan art, they're just like, yeah, our game would look way better. Like it gives them like way more like game design, and just helps them like show the environments in just like a more in-depth way. And it's just a great game. I can't recommend it enough.
Well, with how great of a game it is, did it win any awards at all, or?
I think it got like nominated for like Indie Game of the Year back in 2021. Gotcha. I'm not sure. I don't think it won. I'm pretty sure some other game won, but it definitely got nominated for a few games. And also, it's like IGN gave it like an 8.5. It's setting at like an 81, 82 on Metacritic too. So it's a really good game. You get a lot for your money for it too. And it's going to be on sale a lot for how old it is now.
Oh yeah. Undead, did you want to cover one of yours? We can just kind of bop around between the three of us.
Okay. Wasteland 3.
Ooh.
Okay. So, before InXile got bought by Microsoft, they were working on a project called Wasteland 3.
Mm-hmm.
And the Wasteland series is actually what created the Fallout series.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, Wasteland 1 was made before Fallout, but they're both pretty much made by the same people.
Gotcha, so okay.
So when Wasteland 3 was in development, they actually had their own crowdfunding website and actually managed to complete it in less than 24 hours. And, wow. Yeah. But sadly, they got bought out by at the end of Wasteland 3's development by Microsoft. So I guess it would still be considered indie since it was pretty much already done when they got bought out. But the good news is, though, since the creator of Wasteland 3 for In Exile Studio is the original Fallout developer, he now also works for Microsoft.
Oh, there we go.
So is there any word on what he's working on now then?
No, but we do know that Microsoft has what is called the Vault, and it's supposed to have Obsidian, Bethesda, and In Exile devs for the next Fallout game.
Oh my god.
So you're hoping that these guys are working on New Vegas then. I know I've seen you mention that a few times within the Discord.
Really hope. And I'm hoping for a New Vegas.
what if you just get a Fallout 76 DLC? What's your reaction?
Probably not touch that series again. But on the bright side, if we get failed upon. For Fallout 4, there is a modding community who is actually making Fallout New Vegas in the Fallout 4 engine using all new assets.
Wow.
Oh, well, that's dope.
So, good times are to come.
Yeah, we hope so. I mean, Bethesda for me, I'm still iffy on. I love their franchises, but seeing Fallout in their engine just pains my heart with how outdated and clunky and just glitchy that engine
is. Yeah.
Oh god.
Which is, that's why I was kind of glad for the purchase of Bethesda.
Yeah.
Because under the previous direction of ZeniMax for Bethesda, it was clear that they weren't going down any actual useful path. Like, we've seen how it was. Elder Scrolls was how many years away? And, like, we know that shit wasn't coming out before they got bought out.
Oh, yeah.
We all know it's never coming.
It probably won't come out for another 2, 3, even 4 years from now.
Oh, probably. I mean, 2 years for another announcement is my guess, and maybe another 3 for its release.
Yeah, they've only had like 12 years to come out with their next iteration of Skyrim, right? Because it came out in 2011, right? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, but we gotta remember too, it's just Bethesda was trying to make the Fallout universe and the Elder Scrolls universe, and then they gotta manage with Elder Scrolls Online.
And then their phone games, Fallout Shelter, and
Fallout Shelter actually was pretty fun on the phone, I'm not gonna
lie. I liked it.
Yeah, I love Fallout Shelter.
And then they came out with like a Skyrim phone game too, or an Elder Scrolls phone game. I forget what it was called.
What?
Yeah, it's,
I didn't know that either.
I played a lot of it, and it's definitely a grindy game if you're a free to play user.
Wait, is it a card game?
No, it's literally like you just like run through a dungeon and you just have like a typical sword and shield and like you can use magic and you just like kill enemies and you run through a dungeon.
What?
And then you can like upgrade your village and stuff like that.
Never heard of that either. I think that's like the fifth time I've already said this podcast that I didn't know what the fuck you guys were talking about. We're 13 minutes in. So, I'm learning a lot already as is.
Yeah, there's a lot of games I've never heard of this.
Did it actually do well? Because I feel like something like that would have been cool to play.
It was like well received at the start. I mean, but like a phone game's a phone game, so like not everyone was happy about it. And once you actually put time and effort into the game, that's when you start realizing how you have to like use microtransactions to like progress through the game, or you're just like waiting days and weeks on end just to like do one thing in the game or like upgrade your one building in the town like over a week span and stuff like that. Like think of like Clash of Clans, but like first person.
I'm remembering back now in Fallout Shelter where I got everyone pregnant and then I just had to fucking wait all day just for babies.
Yeah, I did that too. I had the same two people in a room together just pumping out babies the whole time.
Another one.
And then my rad levels kept going up.
Yeah.
It's basically just a sweatshop in that game.
Yeah, right?
A bunker.
I kept getting radiated levels going up, and then all the rats kept invading my shelter, and everyone kept dying.
I kept breeding, so all my people had eventually starved to death.
Yeah. Dude, that game was brutal. It was hard.
Yeah.
Alright, well, I'm gonna hop into my first game here, and Fish, I'm actually gonna need you to lean to your right a little bit.
Lean to my right?
Yeah, lean to your right.
How much more?
A little bit more.
You're both looking left.
Lift your left arm up. Train there.
Oh, that's your talk. I was
there we go.
Where are you going with this?
Right there on the wall. That is my choice right there, folks. Cuphead. Cuphead is definitely one of my favorite independent video games by the studio MDHR. That was actually founded by two brothers, Chad and Jared. I'm not going to even attempt to say their last name. But if you're not familiar with Cuphead, 1930s based kind of like cartoon side scroller, as well as just like hard as fuck boss fights.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Really hard.
I remember purchasing this game for the first time, right? It was $20, you know, easy. Like, the art design itself and the music alone sold me.
Yeah.
And I thought I was getting into, like, a kid's game.
Mm-hmm.
How wrong could I be?
Everyone was wrong.
This was one of the hardest games that I've ever played, but at the same time, like, the frustration building up, and then once you beat the level, was so rewarding. I think kind of a similar vibe to, you know, like a Dark Souls or an Elden Ring, yeah, where the game's just going to beat you down, but it makes it that much more rewarding when you actually conquer it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, if you haven't played this, highly suggest it, but you're going to have to definitely work your way through some frustrations to get that reward.
Pants on for it.
Yeah, and if you don't want to put your gamer pants on, this game was actually so successful that it now has its own Netflix TV show. Also, highly suggest it. The very short episodes, about 10 minutes in length for each one, but the commentary transfers into from the game into the Netflix TV show seamlessly.
Yeah.
So highly suggest that. And like I said, only 20 bones if you want to give the game a go. It might be on Game Pass, not sure. Either way, it's a good time to get into it because we do have new DLC dropping at the end of the month, June 30th,
mm-hmm.
For Cuphead that I've been long awaiting. This is going to give me a reason to finish the game this month. I have two levels left. I got to do the
Dice King
and then the Devil.
Yeah. Arguably, literally the two hardest bosses in the game.
Yeah. So whenever I'm like really feeling down and want to beat the crap out of myself, maybe I'll load up Cuphead.
Yeah, there you go. One funny story I loved hearing from Cuphead when it released was so many people are asking for refunds for that game, especially parents. Because they bought the game for their kids, thinking it was like a, you know, like happy-go-lucky, just like fun game to play. And then their kids were just like crying and raging at it with how hard it was. So like these parents just demanding a refund from this game and like threatening to sue for like saying like
false
advertising, basically. So that was like one of the funniest stories I heard from that game, just like how hard it was.
I remember playing the first level, and Walker and I were playing the co-op because it does have a co-op.
Yeah.
I don't suggest playing the co-op. It is so hard.
It is.
It's easier to play by yourself. But it took us 20 minutes to get past the first level.
Yeah.
So what is going on here?
I need to try it.
Yeah.
So good, Undead. I love it.
You, like, don't expect it to be hard because just, like, the art style is, like,
1930s cartoon.
Yeah, like literally 1930s art style, and it just like it throws you off completely, and it's just like you don't know when you're gonna beat the boss because there's no health bar. You just have to keep hitting it till it eventually dies, and you only have like 3 hit points. You can only get hit 3 times before you have to like restart the level and everything. So it's such a brutal game, but it's just so fun to play.
Yeah, and if people are looking to try it, it is available on Xbox as well as PC.
Mm-hmm.
But
is Game Pass, actually?
It might be on Game Pass. I'm not 100%, but it might be.
I'm not sure if it is or not. I feel like I would have seen it on Game Pass by now, but I bought it when it first came out.
But all right, Fish, let's hop on to your second game.
Yes.
Risk of Rain 2 for your first. Where are you going for your second?
So the second one, which, so speaking of Dark Souls-style game, is a game called Ashen. And this game was so damn fun. I just, like, randomly downloaded it one day, and I just played the hell out of it, and I eventually beat it. But I was not expecting it to be this hard. It was made by A44 Games, which is, like, a studio started recently, like, back in 2013. They announced their game also at Microsoft's E3 event back in 2016, and this was, like, under... when Microsoft started like their new program called the Independent Developer Games, like ID at Xbox. And
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they were under the guise of that when they first announced it during the press conference. And, dude, this game was released in like the end of 2018, like December 2018. And it, dude, it's just so fun. Like, it's got ridiculously high ratings. It's definitely a Dark Souls-like game. It'll definitely beat you to high hell.
I got a funny story about this game, actually.
I think I know you're talking about.
I was really vibing with it, and Brink was like, "Hey, man, let's do like a duos run." I was like, "All right, let's do it."
Mm-hmm.
We played for like an hour, got to the first boss, and we probably lost the first boss like three or four times. And Jim's like, "Yeah, I'm done." I'm like, "What do you mean you're done?"
Yeah,
we were playing like we were gonna beat this game together. He goes, "No, it's not for me. I'm done."
That's so surprised, dude. I almost quit too after the first boss. I was just like, "Why is this so goddamn hard to play?" Like, I was getting so frustrated just from the first boss alone, too. The like little creature in the cave, yeah, and everything,
like in and out of the walls and stuff, and yeah. It's the dark cave.
Exactly. I just like I had no idea what to expect from the game, and then like when you play Dark Souls games, there's just like a moment where it just like clicks in your head,
right?
And that's when you like know how to play the game. So after I beat that first boss, that's like when it clicked for me, and I was just like, "Oh hell yeah, I love this game now," and one of the most brutal things in it was they had like dungeons in it, like full-on like dungeons and like castles that you ran through, and like there's like a spawn system in the game, like they have like checkpoints that you can go through, but when you get to these dungeons, the checkpoint is at the beginning and at the end of it, no in between.
Yeah,
and these dungeons would take you anywhere from like an hour to 2 hours to get through it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So when you died, man. Yeah, when you died, you got sent straight back to the beginning, and you had to refight through all those enemies. And most of the time, you couldn't just, like, run through the mobs to get through, like, the next area. You would just, like, get killed. So, like, I would attempt it, and, like, even if I did get through them, like, I would be, like, 1 HP for the boss fight and just die anyways. So, like, you had to play super smart and just, like, grind through that dungeon for like an hour or two just to get to the final boss. And when you got to the final boss, they weren't any easier. They're like super, like just like with that enemy in like the cave, the first boss, like they just got progressively harder and harder and harder and harder. So the game definitely wasn't holding your hand throughout the entire time, and it's just so fun. I'm so glad I just like randomly downloaded one day and started playing it.
Oh yeah, and then who makes that game?
A44 Games. They started in 2013, and they actually have another game that they've been developing. It's called Flintlock, and it says it's supposed to release sometime this year. They don't have a specific date, it just says 2022, but I rewatched a trailer for it because they showed their trailer, I think, like a year or two ago during E3, and it actually looks really good, so I'm excited to see when that comes out, if it doesn't get delayed this year.
Right. Well, I mean, maybe that's one of the games that gets shown at the Xbox Bethesda game or showcase coming up, right?
Ooh, potentially, yeah.
Can't wait.
Xbox does have a pretty good track record of showing a wide variety of indie games at their shows.
Yeah, so. They have like a whole section dedicated. Right. It's like literally like 15, 20 minutes of just like indie game after indie game showing up.
Yeah, so maybe we'll see something there. But
I hope so, yeah.
I'm going to bob back to you, Undead. Where do you want to go with your second favorite indie game that you played?
Fish is actually familiar with this one, of this war of mine.
Oh yeah.
I'm not gonna say it, but tell me about it.
What are your thoughts?
So this war of mine is actually based on a real war, and you actually play as civilians who are trapped in a city that's being sieged upon. So basically you just have to like build your shelter and survive with like other people too, but you have to worry about morale and stuff, because
oh yeah,
say if you go and kill an old couple, your guy suffers depression and will lash out at people.
Yep. I or, did that too.
Is this on or PC or where is this at?
It's on Game Pass.
Oh, it's on Game Pass.
Yeah,
I bought it at launch though, like a while ago, and I put like 100 hours into the first week.
Good God.
And that's literally how long it felt like it took me to beat it. Because, like, if your person gets too sick, they can't move or get up anywhere.
Yeah, it's like a brutal survivor game, too. It's like side-scrolling, like 2D style.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's really good for it too. I actually like the way they went with that.
Yeah, I love the art direction of it. It looks really cool. And like the dialogue and just like the stories that you can like pick up from like listening to like other people talk, and like the notes that you pick up from like buildings and stuff. It's just like so good.
I don't know if I misread this somewhere or if I did forget it, but I think like all the characters were like based off of stories from that war, because it's based on the Bosnian War.
Oh, okay.
So I think the characters may or may not be representations of those stories. That's pretty crazy, though, because they actually keep the game up to date, too. Like, even to this day, it gets random updates. They have a DLC where they introduce children. You would have to, like, take care of children while doing this. So it just makes it better.
Imagine a game that gets regular updates.
Yeah, right? Wouldn't know it.
Man. But they're also very charitable, too. Like, they have a DLC for the War Child charity where, like, 100% of the proceeds just go to it. Then when the Ukrainian war started, they actually donated like 100% of their like proceeds for like an entire month to it.
Oh, wow, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, to a variety of organizations, too.
Yeah, I don't know how you beat that game, because I sunk maybe like 10, 20 hours into it, and I couldn't get past like a week in that game.
Oh, that game, that's why I said too. It took me a long time just to win it once. And after I beat it once, I started like beating it over and over on the other survivors you get.
Mm-hmm.
But it just gets harder and harder. Because, like,
yeah,
you'll get,
that's
like,
what I'm saying.
Old people who can't really do much.
Well, I would just like, I didn't know how to play the game, so I was just like randomly choosing my survivors. I didn't really have a choice. It only gave me like 3 or 4 to begin with.
Oh, yeah.
But
that's
the
story one.
Yeah, like I thought I was like doing good like the first couple days. You know, like I would build a couple beds and then like build, you know, like a water purifier, like a kitchen stove and everything, like cook meals. And then like day 4 and 5 comes around and like my guy is just constantly sick. I'm giving him medicine. He's not getting better. I go out to scavenge at night, and I find out that my place got raided, so I got nothing, I got no supplies back home, even though I just brought supplies back. One of them got stabbed in the chest, and he's dying or bleeding out. And then, like, I go scavenge again, and I go kill some people, and my guy's depressed, and I go
take
him out.
You're getting a little angry there, Fish.
Yeah. I don't know how you beat it. It's so hard. It's actually so hard to beat. It's just like, if you use the same guy and you start killing people, he eventually becomes depressed, and then he becomes broken, and then he just doesn't do anything while in the shelter.
On the floor.
Yeah, he just sits on the floor moping around, like, saying all the people he's killed and everything. And then he eventually just leaves your shelter, and then you're just basically screwed the rest of the time.
Yeah, one of my first few playthroughs, like, so there was an area I never went to before. So I go through it, and I'm walking out in the open, and my dude gets sniped.
that happened to me, too.
Like, what am I supposed to do with that?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I actually figured out how to get through the sniper, but then on my way back, I get shot in the open street, and then he starts, like, crawling, and then he gets shot again, and he dies. I was just like, well, there goes my playthrough. I'm done. I'm done right there. The game is really fun. It's just brutal. It's really brutal.
It is. And they don't hold back on anything, too. Like, you got like, makeshift broths of, like, homeless people being used and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Got, a school shelter of just, like, people hiding in it. Pretty much gonna starve to death.
People in the hospital trying to seek treatment, and you're trying to steal supplies from the hospital, and your guy gets super depressed for stealing supplies from the hospital.
Well, when you're you murdering the entire hospital, he's going to be depressed.
Yep.
Well, that definitely sounds like a game that I need to try out. I got one for you guys that you need to try out. Haven't already, it's a Megastorm game, if you heard of them before.
I have not, no.
And it goes by the title of Shotgun Farmers.
Oh, that game. Okay.
Oh, I think I remember you talking about this. Like,
you were obsessed with it.
I was obsessed with it for a little while. This is a game that, like, when I hop off of, like, Warzone or Vigor or whatever game I was sweating on at that time, I'd be like, all right, let me get some Shotgun Farmers in my life.
A little cool down period.
If I am remembering right, I think when I did start talking to you after you joined the 501st, you were like talking about that game, and I'm like, "What is this game? What is this?"
Yeah, if If you guys don't have it, I'll gift it to you. All right. I want us to go and just like squad white people on Shotgun Farmers.
Just pub stomp everyone.
Yeah. No skill based matchmaking. Whoever comes in our way is just gonna get annihilated. All right. Don't have to go into Onyx lobbies. All right.
Oh my god. Well, that's so refreshing.
We should remember there really is no skill based matchmaking if we're going for Halo.
Very true.
Fair enough. But yeah, a little bit of Shotgun Farmers. It sounds pretty much, the name kind of implies like what the game is, right?
Yeah.
So crops are sprouting up all around the farm, and each one is a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
The corn is a shotgun. The hay is an AK-47. The peas are a revolver. The carrot is a rocket launcher. Tomatoes are a grenade launcher. Roses are bow and arrow. Like, each vegetable or plant on the farm is a weapon
that you pick up out of the ground.
Yeah. And the other thing is, too, if you want more ammo, you shoot the gun into the ground and it will sprout another crop. So you have to wait for ammo. Like, you shoot it in the ground, plant a crop, and then you can, like, harvest ammo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what do you do with the eggplant?
The eggplant? I don't know if there is an eggplant, actually. I'm trying to think. I'm not sure.
What you're going for? I'm dead. Not gonna fall for it.
Yeah, I was about to walk right into it. Damn it. Damn it, undead. But this is definitely a game that is like just genuine good fun, right? It's a first-person shooter, which is right up my alley, and yeah. Like I said, I will gift this game to whoever wants to play it with me. I know Matt's got it. Brian's got it because he game shares with me. So we should get a squad on Shotgun Farmers and get this going. I actually follow the artist and artist programmer and designer. I'm going to butcher the hell out of his name. Wazi Kazi?
Sounds like you butchered it.
Oh, butchered, dude. Absolutely butchered it. But he like posts on Instagram all of his like different designs and stuff, and mm-hmm. takes community input and has different console like exclusive skins.
Yeah,
like seems like a really like dope, like in tune with this community kind of guy.
Yeah, it's cool that you brought up the community thing, because I actually saw him develop the game on TikTok. He was making videos on TikTok like a year or two ago. And he was taking direct like feedback from people. Like, he would develop like a gun, like the shotgun, like the corn shotgun and everything. Like, he would tell people, is like, I'm thinking about doing this with the gun. Like, is there anything else I should change? And like, he was like reading people's comments, and he's like, I really like that idea. So like, he was like changing the game directly from the feedback he was getting from his TikTok.
Pretty sure that's where the AK came from.
Yeah.
Is somebody was like, hey, let's make an AK in the game, and like maybe like we can make it like a haystack.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, all right, I'll work on it. And then, you know, I think that the Hay AK came out probably in the last 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I do still follow him on Instagram. I keep tabs on the game even though I'm not actively playing it.
Right, right.
And it's really cool to see like how far it's come from when I first started playing it to now. They do like different holiday events and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And additionally, it just makes me wonder if this guy can do this with a team of like, I don't know, like 20 people or whatever it is on this game, and we can't get like events like in AAA games. I'm just like, come on. You know what I mean? Like, this guy's putting so much effort into this game, and they have such smaller resources. Like we said at the beginning, creativity and everything else in the indie games is something that the industry needs. So games like this, I'm fully supporting and backing.
Oh, yeah.
But all right, Fish, let's get on to your third one, my friend.
All right, my third and final one, which came out recently. It came out at December of last year. But this game, it took me by complete surprise with how good it was, especially with the cast that it has. But this game is called 12 Minutes, and it was made by one guy who eventually picked up like a few other, like a team of five people to like finish the development of the game and everything. But it was made by Luis Antonio, who is a former artist for Rockstar and Ubisoft. And he wanted to make the game later on, like after he left like Ubisoft and everything. But he was like basing his game off of like game loops and everything, which is pretty prevalent in 12 Minutes. Because like the whole game is just like about trial and error and try to like figure out the game and everything. But the good thing about, or like the great thing about that game was the cast, because it had three legendary actors in that game, like voice acting for it, which was James McAvoy, Willem Dafoe, and Daisy Ridley. So all three of them were voice acting in this indie game, which I just was just like absolutely insane to think about.
And it's so cool that they were able to get those guys to be in the game.
Right. Yeah. And I forget what studio published them. What was the name of it? I literally looked it up earlier today and I forgot what it was. But yeah.
Annapurna.
Yeah. Annapurna. Yeah. Annapurna Studios. He drew inspirations from the game, from like the movies he's watched, which was like, he got inspirations from The Shining, Groundhog Day, and which I found kind of funny was, what was the other movie? Rear Window by Alfred Hitchcock, which was a movie that I did for my film study class. So that's probably why I like the game so much, because it's just like, it's basing off of like mystery, game loops, and just like how you figure out the story as you progress by like all these decision makings that you do. So it's just like, it's insane to think about that one man plus like five other people later in development just developed this game with three legendary actors for it.
Oh yeah. This is another one. Oh, go ahead, Undead.
I was gonna say, it was like for the game, like, as much as you will think about it, it's kind of crazy how little is actually in the game, though. But how, like I guess...
More dialogue-driven?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it takes place in one apartment room.
Yeah.
But, like, so much work had gone into it to make it, like, the best puzzle game. And even then, like, it's the twist at the end that really gets you.
Yeah. And people are, like mixed reviews on the ending and everything. I thought it was like really good and just like crazy to think about. Louis Antonio, like, he originally, when he was first developing the game, he wanted to like make the game based around like a neighborhood and everything, but then he realized like that scope is too big for him. That's when he like kind of like singulared in toward like the apartment setting and everything.
Yeah.
So you said the best puzzle game. I have one that could go toe-to-toe with this, and it's another indie game as far as puzzle games go, is The Witness. I don't know if you guys played that at all. The Witness was a 10 out of 10 rated game by IGN. Excellent puzzle game if you haven't tried that one. I didn't finish it because it was too hard, and I was just like... usually I'm playing video games to relax, and my brain was just on overload playing The Witness, but it's such a beautifully designed game and the puzzles in it are excellent.
Yeah.
12 Minutes is still on my backlog. That as we've mentioned, and when worlds collide and just through different streaming experiences, my backlog continues to grow.
Never ending.
Yeah. I should make a doc of just all my backlog.
Yeah. Yeah, but like in terms of like 12 minutes, like the gameplay is like really simple and everything, but it shines just with its dialogue between those three actors and just like how you figure out the story, and just like it's all decision made. So like how, like, you can do one run and just like go through like the same decisions, but like that one different change they do just completely changes the outcome of how the story will play out. And then you just gotta like figure out from there how to like progress from that. That's why I love the game so much. It was just like so unexpectedly good.
So another dialogue-driven game, I think you're gonna highlight next, Undead, as your third game is what?
Telltale's The Walking Dead.
Ooh, baby!
I played episode one. I loved it, but it wasn't enough for me to buy the next episodes. Does it get better? Yeah. Is the first episode the best one, or do they kind of...
Well, as a huge fan of this series, I will say the first season is kind of the slowest for it all.
But oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so once you get through that first season, everything just speeds up from there. You got more action, more drama, the stories are more expansive and emotional.
I remember one scene in particular playing through episode one where there's somebody hiding behind a cop car and there's a zombie and you're trying to figure out what to do there. I really enjoyed that. Yeah, I don't know why that sticks in my head so much, but like I said, that was definitely a game I enjoyed. That okay, episode 2 and whatever, how far it goes, backlog.
Well, if you do, oh yeah, that's right. Actually, they have all the seasons I think on Game Pass for you, besides the last one.
Ooh,
okay, I like that too. You know, you get. They leave you little pieces of cheese, and then they want you to kind of top them off at the end. I'm fine with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because they went bankrupt.
Yeah, unfortunate.
Damn. I was never really a fan of like episodic releases, because if I'm paying for a game, I want like the full price game. Like I don't want to be like waiting. To like episode 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 and everything.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah, so and I know like I think each episode is like $10 or something, like give or around there.
Yeah,
but
I do think they went that route mainly because of an economic situation, because they went bankrupt, I believe, from all the licensing and publishing and all the fees that was taken out of the final cost. Because you got to remember too, at the time of these games. Microsoft and Sony and Steam took what, at least 30% of each thing, and that's not the licensing fees that they would have to pay. And if they weren't self-publishing, you also have those fees you would have to take out too. So eventually it did all stack up and they went bankrupt. And I do think that's kind of the main reason why they stuck to episodic in the first place, is to try to hopefully prevent that, but doesn't seem like.
Did this team get absorbed by any other company, or are they kind of just out in limbo right now?
Actually, they're back, actually, yeah. They're currently, I think, getting all their IPs back.
Wow.
Oh, awesome. But, so are they working on anything in particular right now then, or no?
Yes, actually. So they're making another Telltale's Walking Dead, which will, again, be with Clementine. Because if you play through all the seasons, you'll realize the entire game is all about Clementine. Even from season 1, when you're playing as Lee, it was always about Clementine. And you don't find that out until season 2. And then when you realize you're in the final season for Clementine, trying to take care of a child who matured a lot faster because he completely skipped adulthood, you realize it's all about her life, and then it's moving on to that child. And then the new season, I'm not sure who it's going to revolve around on, but I feel like it's going to be the child.
Do they still have the Borderlands IP that they're working on? Because that was one series I was like, I really wanted to play, but I just did not want to play for the
season. Telltale's Borderlands is actually really good, and I liked how they put the lore and how it's actually canon for Borderlands 3.
Yeah. I remember, I never played them, but I saw, like, plenty of clips and everything. Didn't a couple of them, like, revolve around Handsome Jack and all that?
Yes. So Handsome Jack was basically your partner and enemy at the same time for the Telltale series. And that's actually what made it great, was you actually see a whole new side of Handsome Jack.
Yeah, he's like one of the best like video game characters of all time. Like everyone, I never played Borderlands 2, but I really wish I did, but everyone just says like Handsome Jack is just like one of the best villains slash just like characters.
Better than Voss? Voss is definitely one of my favorite villains of all time.
Voss is actually a pretty good villain too.
I mean, there's a lot of good villains in games, but like he just like the characteristics that he had just made him so likable. He's just like a sarcastic asshole that just did whatever the hell he wanted in the game. That's why it's just so funny.
You know, you know what might be a good story for next month? We haven't gotten into our story for this week yet, but I do believe there's a pretty good. Hidden gem behind the story of Voss.
Ooh.
Maybe that's something we explore next month.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I would say that, like, I think if you can come up with the perfect villain, then you have a really good game. Because as much as it is, players want just great characters. And some of that stuff can, like, if you have a bad mechanic but a really good story, it kind of overlooks it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. One of the games that I wanted to highlight next, you're not really sure what the villain is or what's trying to kill you. This is an End Night Games, founded by a former visual effects artist, and they have a small team that put out a stellar game. They're working on their sequel right now. The game I'm talking about is The Forest.
Ooh.
This game is awesome. I wish I had more people to play with it. At the time, it was just me and Lars bopping around in the forest. Had a great time with it. I know I've seen Death playing it. Might have to hop back on with Death and play it. But The Forest 2 sequel actually will be coming to console as well. So hopefully a wider player base that we can all play together.
Did it get delayed till next year?
I don't know.
The Forest is like one of those games I really wish I played too. And I really want to get the next one because it's supposed to come out for consoles and everything. So
it
probably
get
got delayed.
I think it did.
I just Googled it and it said The Forest sequel gets delayed.
I remember seeing news that it got delayed. I just don't know when though.
Oh yeah, because it was supposed to come out in May, and we were all hyped about it. And mm-hmm. I don't know when it got delayed too. I'm gonna give it a look here. It says October.
Ooh,
not that bad, really?
Ooh, that's a perfect time to release
not bad.
It.
But I mean, it's gonna be a lot of fun though, because I'm hoping they're gonna expand on the building system and the co-op system.
I want to be. I want to be a builder in our little survivor tent.
Well, I don't know if you guys knew this, but for the PC community of The Forest, you can have more than four players, and what they would do is they would do battle royales on the island.
Ooh.
Really?
Oh my gosh, that sounds so fun.
I'm hoping they'll probably at least allow some functionality for that, at least for consoles.
I was just getting murdered out constantly.
All the cannibals on the island were just killing you.
Yeah.
You think we're going to get a trailer for it for E3?
I hope so. I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, it's not that long until it's released, so I feel like they should take every advantage of promotion as they can.
Right.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Well, that's kind of our little snippet of highlighting independent games. Those were our top three. Highly suggest, if you haven't played any of those, give them a try.
Mm-hmm.
As we mentioned, some of those actually are on Game Pass. So definitely venture into those games. But we do have another story, a hidden gem, a treasure within the video game industry that we want to identify. And this story is pertaining to Gears of War 3 and a musician by the name of Drake. Not sure if you guys have heard of him or not.
I don't know who he is. Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Is this a friend of yours?
Nah, he's actually from up north in Canada.
Mm.
Yeah. I guess he's a pretty good musician, but initially, when Gears of War 3 was in development, he was supposed to voice the character of Jace.
Oh.
Jace in Gears of War 3 was one of the playable characters that you could play in the campaign. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know where I was going with that sentence. You know, 60%. You know, just because there's a different title here doesn't mean my brain's not working at 60%.
Always, baby.
So there's this guy named Chase. Go on.
Yeah, so he was one of the central characters in the Gears of War spinoff comic books. And in Gears of War 3 in particular, he's one of the playable characters during the cooperative campaign, which involves you being able to team up with three other of your buddies to fight the Locust.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, initially, Drake was supposed to voice this character prior to the launch of his first album, following his signing with YMCMB. So this was back in 2009, 2010 time, before Drake blew up, right? And at the time, Ron Ferguson, the head of Gears of War, said this quote. He said, after his first session recording in the studio, his first time ever voice acting, he said, Drake was amazing, but after the first session of yelling in combat dialogue, his manager reached out the next day to say Drake could not continue the role because the demands were too heavy on his voice.
Oh no, dude. That sucks.
So
sucks.
It really does. Like, hindsight, this is like when Drake was still low key, right?
Yeah.
He was still like I don't want to say bottom of the totem pole with YMCMB, but the emphasis. Yeah, the emphasis was obviously on Lil Wayne and Birdman and some of the higher-ups in YMCMB. So hindsight is just is so cool to see that, you know, he could have been voicing Jace, but he didn't, and it's probably for the best after he did release this album. It went number one in America and Canada on the charts and then ended up going platinum.
Yeah.
So hindsight 2020, maybe not pursuing a career in voice acting for video games was the best move for Drake. But just as well, we got a very good secondary that voiced the character in Michael B. Jordan.
Well known actor. Might have heard of him.
Yeah, have you guys seen any Michael B. Jordan's work?
Yeah, maybe. He plays basketball.
Oh my god. I knew somebody was gonna mention that. I was like, god damn it. So dumb.
That's exactly what I needed.
Oh my god. He played in Black Panther. What was his name? Warmonger, something like that?
Something like that. I believe it might have been Warmonger, exactly.
But yeah, he's a great actor.
He did really good for that.
Yeah.
He did. So Michael B. Jordan, like Fish mentioned, was in Black Panther as well as Creed. But prior to that, he had some video game voicing in Gears of War as well as 2K. And that's actually kind of where my hate for Michael B. Jordan came, because he was... I always said to people, they're like, why do you hate Michael B. Jordan? Because I was like, in 2K, when you're playing my player, he was like your rival, and he was such an asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was talking shit to you the whole time.
Yeah, so like, you get these games, like, you guys both get drafted to different teams, and whenever you play Michael B. Jordan's team, he like comes up to you pregame, he's like, basically, like, you a bitch, like, I'm gonna lock you down. I'm like, all right, Michael B. Jordan, you a hoe, bro, let's go.
Who do you think you are?
I think it's kind of crazy how, like, you get, like, this weird, bad guy dynamic with actors who constantly play the bad people,
right? And then it's just cemented in your brain.
Well, yeah. As much as there's a lot of controversy around him now, I think Kevin Spacey for Call of Duty
Advanced Warfare,
yeah
like that made I watched House of Cards and that, so I just always knew not to trust the guy.
And then that whole spiel with him. The whole lawsuits and everything.
Yeah, we won't go down that route.
No, we won't. That's an endless pit.
But yeah, I kind of want to stem off of this. You know, unfortunately, we didn't have Drake voice Jason Gears of War 3. Like I said, hindsight, that would have been awesome. But I want to bring up the point of hip-hop's growing influence in the gaming community, right?
Yeah.
So it felt like... this all started back in like the early 2000s when games like 2K, Knockout Kings, and Def Jam were all very instrumental in bringing the hip-hop culture to life virtually.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to highlight some of the names that kind of got that going. First off, before we do name some of these names, did you guys play any of the 2Ks, Knockout Kings, or Def Jam?
I definitely played 2K games. I feel like I played Def Jam. I didn't play Knockout City, though. I know I didn't play that one. But I definitely played 2K games, and I've talked about this before, and Walker permanently scarred me from those kind of games when I was a kid. So that's why I'm not familiar with them nowadays.
A big sports game guy.
Yeah, I just get nightmares from them if I ever touch them.
Yeah. How about you, Unda? Do any of those titles, do you resonate with them at all?
What are sports? That's the question we should start with.
So actually, 2K is the only sports game here. The other two are actually fighting games.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't play any of them.
Well, I will say this. I highly suggest anyone that hasn't played Def Jam, give it a go. That would be my recommendation out of the three here. Def Jam was basically like... So the one I can recall is like Def Jam New York, and it was basically... you're just like fighting in the streets to rap music. It was awesome.
The only one that comes to mind is this old show, Celebrity Deathmatch.
Oh, so one of the guys on our list that I wanted to highlight, so we have a list of artists here, was actually in the Celebrity Deathmatch game. So I'm going to run through this list here real quick. The guy that was actually featured in Celebrity Deathmatch was Busta Rhymes. as well as Celebrity Deathmatch, he was in two of the Def Jam games.
Oh shit. Okay.
So that was one of the rap artists that we wanted to highlight that was part of the growth of hip hop in the gaming industry. Some of the other ones: Kanye West, Little John, Dr. Dre, 50 Cent, Eminem, Redman, Nelly, and Snoop Dogg. Redman was also in the Def Jam games, as well as Snoop Dogg. I don't think anybody else on this list was were in the Def Jam games, but some of the guys in particular that we wanted to highlight here, for me, I wanted to talk about 50 Cent because I actually played the 50 Cent games. I've always been a big 50 Cent fan.
Yeah.
Obviously, 50 Cent had his own games, Bulletproof and then Blood on the Sand. I played Blood on the Sand. I still have that disc somewhere. I might have to stream it. It's so dope, dude.
How old were you when you got it?
I wasn't allowed to play this when I was younger.
Yeah, that's what I was asking.
Yeah, so when I was in freshman in college, I was looking for something to play. And I used to always buy games used off of eBay.
Yeah.
And I found 50 Cent Blood on the Sand on there for like $10. I'm like, fuck yeah, let's do it. So basically the US government hires 50 Cent to go kill like Al Qaeda. So they hire 50 Cent
game right
yeah
there.
They hire 50 Cent as like a mercenary to like go take out the Taliban, dude.
The entire game
"50 Cent's Get Rich or Die Trying" album is on repeat.
Oh, there we
so,
go.
Like, you, as you're playing through the game, you just have 50 Cent's music playing in the background. And honestly, like, if you're looking for like just like a dumb fun game, like, this is it.
This is it.
I will say my one gripe was after the 20th time of listening to Get Rich or Die Trying, I had to mute the music.
Yeah.
It just plays on repeat the entire game.
It's like a song you just hear so many times on the radio, you get sick of it. You're like, all right, I'm done
with
it.
Actually, it's pretty crazy if you think back on the variety of games we've had in the past, and then you kind of just look at how many games there really are for the AAA scene now, yeah. And how most of them are just the same titles from like a decade ago, at mm-hmm. least.
Right. I feel like you don't get like games like that anymore, you know?
Yeah.
You don't get variety anymore is kind of how I see it. Like, right. We still have Assassin's Creed going on since, what, the 360, the very start of it?
2006, 2008.
Yeah, I think they just added Assassin's Creed Origins, though, they just got added on Game Pass today.
Yeah, I downloaded that today.
I saw that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about to download.
One of the other things that 50 Cent did, he was actually the voice of a Navy SEAL in Modern Warfare 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
My
God.
I can't remember any of the Call of Duty campaigns anymore. They just all just mesh together for me now.
Right. But it's kind of cool. Like, you see all these different highlights of, you know, these different hip-hop artists within games, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the other ones... have you heard of somebody called Snoop Dogg Undead?
Snoop Dogg.
D-O-double-G, buddy.
Snoop Dogg.
Well, if you're not familiar with Snoop Dogg, very famous hip-hop artist, was actually one of the featured people in the Super Bowl halftime show, along with 50 Cent.
Oh, yeah. And Eminem.
And Snoop Dogg, actually, if you might have seen some of these memes, a lot of people were making TikToks of Snoop. He streams on Twitch playing Call of Duty and Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people were putting Snoop Dogg's like cam to their gameplay.
Yeah, I've seen those. They're so good.
And those were excellent. But Snoop Dogg himself made his first appearance in video games in True Crime Streets of LA back in 2003. And since then has been on a multitude of games, including Def Jam, Tekken Tag Tournament, Call of Duty Ghost, as well as Warzone recently. And then also, I believe, Madden 2021 and 22.
It sounds right, yeah.
So Snoop has been heavily involved in the gaming world, which is pretty awesome if you ask me.
I think the craziest one is seeing him in Warzone as a playable character.
Yeah.
I will say this isn't one that he was actually involved in, but people did make memes of him during Battlefield 5 because they did mass tournaments for it, and Snoop Dogg was one of the contestants.
Oh,
and
okay.
Somebody
really?
Had posted a video of him being high and showing his KD being really bad for once.
That's That's funny.
So he was kind of known for that for a bit.
Didn't he have I think when he was like first streaming on Twitch, he had like one of his first like Twitch streams. He had his entire stream just muted, and he had his stream muted for like 8 hours plus long. And like everyone in chat was telling him, but like he didn't read chat once that entire time. So he was just streaming games completely muted. You couldn't hear anything, but he still had like tens of thousands of people watching him that entire time.
Oh my
God. You know the other thing he did too? He was streaming Madden online once and rage quit and like left his computer on and left his stream going for hours.
Yeah. He like came back the next day. He's like, am I still streaming? What the hell?
Yeah, I'm guilty of that as well, actually. Boy, when I got a little sauced up one booze night and went out to the bar and just left his stream on. I got a text from like Tink. Like, it might have been Mama, it might have been you. Like, there's like four or five people texting me. They're like, hey, dude, your stream's still on.
Yeah, I think I texted you that night.
And I was just like, well, fuck, I'm out at the bar right now.
They're going to have to deal with it.
Enjoy my chair.
Yeah, you got some pretty free views right there.
So, I know you guys don't like sports games, but the Street series, whether it was NBA Street or NFL Street, were a lot of fun. The more arcade kind of sports games.
NFL Street was dope when you like made me play it against like Matt and all of them. That game is super fun.
Yeah, man. The more arcadey sports games are, I think, honestly, more fun than like the simulators.
Yeah, the more serious ones.
Right. But somebody that appeared in NBA Street Volume 2 alongside his crew, the Saint Lunatics, was Nelly.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah, so Nelly, you know, obviously a very prominent artist back in the day, was in NBA Street Volume 2 and was the captain for his team, Saint Lunatics. As well, he added a song to the game that was previously unreleased.
Oh, so shit.
He had a song that had never been heard before that he dropped in NBA Street Volume 2.
Oh, okay. Nice. What was the song? Do you know?
No, I don't.
It was a while ago.
But yeah, like, dope, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm all about, like, the gaming industry being diversified in different ways, including music, right? I think, as we pointed out before with indie games, the more creativity that's in the industry, it's just better for us as a whole. And it was very cool to kind of be able to look this up and see how much hip-hop actually has influenced the gaming world in these different ways. And we didn't even talk about some of the things with these different artists, you know. One of my favorite missions in Saints Row 3, as I think you would recall, I don't know, Undead, did you play Saints Row 3?
Yeah, and I don't know if we're thinking about the same level.
Do you remember when you're in Saints Row headquarters and you have to jump off the building because it's exploding?
Let me see. I think I do, but that's also not the level I was thinking of.
Yeah, so, like, you know, you walk outside of your, like, penthouse and you have the pools and stuff, and it's getting ready to explode because one of the other gangs is blowing it up. So you have to jump off the building, and then that music starts playing.
Oh, no. But I do remember, I think it was Saints Row 3, though, where at the beginning you get out of the plane, and then the song starts playing while you're flying down.
I think you're right. I'm not sure what song that is. The one I had in mind for the mission I was depicting was the song Power, which was actually by Kanye West. So that's another example of these hip-hop artists being in these games, right? As well, I believe Kanye actually helped develop 2K10.
Really?
Yeah, there's been a long list in the 2K series of artists being the like creative design for the game to some degree.
Oh.
Like, I know Spike Lee, he's not a hip-hop artist, but like I know he directed a game, and a lot of different musicians have had influence on the 2K games themselves.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, I was gonna say both the scenes we're talking about both played the same song.
Oh, really?
Oh,
Kanye West, yeah.
Okay, butter.
Well, there you go, worked out.
Well, yeah, guys, so appreciate everybody hanging out. I think that'll do it, huh, guys?
Yeah, I think that's it. That just about does it.
Undead, what do you think? First podcast episode, how do you feel?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, a little more enthusiasm there. How do you feel there?
Oh, I don't know, Smalls. I feel pretty good.
Best moment of my life.
Oh, my God.
Honestly, that's pretty exciteful for Undead with his usual demeanor.
Fair enough. Bye, everybody in chat. Everybody that tuned in tonight, thank you very much. This is the first episode of Hidden Gems. We're going to continue to build on this as we go forward. Hidden Gems will be a once a month podcast where When Worlds Collide will take over the other 3 weeks out of the month. But we'll be back with When Worlds Collide next week.
Yes, sir.
Again, thank you everyone for tuning in for episode 1 of Hidden Gems.